This is Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Day two of the president's defense is in the books. We'll break it down today on Jay Sekulow Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
We deal with transcript evidence. We deal with publicly available information. We do not deal with speculation, allegations that are not based on evidentiary standards at all.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
I want to keep coming back to facts. Facts that are really undisputed. It is our position as President's counsel that the President was at all time acting under his constitutional authority, under his legal authority, in our national interest, and pursuant to his oath of office.
And now your host, Than Bennett.
Welcome into Jay Sekulow Live, everyone. Than Bennett with you again today from Washington, D.C. And day two of the president's defense is in the books, folks. We hope to get a live update here shortly from Jordan Sekulow on how the president's team feels about their first full day of presenting. And I have to think they feel pretty good. This was fascinating to watch, folks. The Senate was in session from about 1 o'clock in the afternoon until about 9 o'clock at night. Just very roughly, there were about 7 hours of presentations from the president's team. Jay Sekulow, our chief counsel, the host of this broadcast, working in his private capacity as counsel to the president, served as sort of the manager of the narrative today. We heard several different presentations on a variety of topics from him, and then he yielded to several members of the president's legal defense team over the course of the day to give more detailed arguments about specific portions of the case. I thought it was very effective to hear from multiple people presenting on multiple topics, getting deep into the weeds on the legal details of the various issues. I thought it was tremendously effective. It was organized, it was calculated, it was detailed, and I thought it was really in control of the facts, folks. They stayed very focused on the facts and the evidence. You heard that piece of sound from Jay in the open. I'm actually going to play it again for you in just a moment because I thought it really took head on each of the main tenets that was advanced by the House managers over the course of the previous few days. And I think it's important for you to hear this sound directly, folks. We've got Professor Hutchison and Colonel Smith here to help break it down for you. We're going to give you our thoughts, but I want you to hear a lot of this sound directly from the president's team as it played out on the floor of the Senate yesterday. We will get to a lot of that sound in the next segment of the broadcast. We'll also look ahead to today's presentation. It's the final day of presentations from the president's defense team. It's almost time for votes, folks. The president's team has about 15 hours left should they choose to use it. I think you heard from the White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, they likely will not use it all, but it is their right. They have about 15 hours remaining if they decide to do it. Then we'll have senators' questions. And then, folks, it will be time to start moving through votes and bringing this matter to a conclusion. I think it will be to the great relief of the American people. But as we close this segment of the broadcast, I want to play a bite for you from Jay Sekulow, our chief counsel, that I think sums up the tone of yesterday's proceeding. This is what the White House, the president's defense team focused on yesterday. Jay Sekulow on the floor of the United States Senate, bite one.
What we've done on Saturday is the pattern that we're going to continue today as far as how we're going to deal with the case. We deal with transcript evidence. We deal with publicly available information. We do not deal with speculation, allegations that are not based on evidentiary standards at all.
Facts and evidence, not speculation. Folks, that's what this should have been about from the very beginning. It all too often was not in the House, but yesterday we returned to it in the United States Senate. You had presentations from everyone from Jay Sekulow to Ken Starr to Alan Dershowitz. Folks, that's how sweeping it was. We're going to play sound for you from several members of the team. Of course, sound from Jay as well. Hope to be joined by Jordan for a live update as the president's team prepares for their final day. Folks, I think the American people are ready for this to be brought to a close. I think increasingly so are the United States senators. Fortunately, those votes are just days away. One more day from the president's legal defense team, then likely 2 days of questions from senators. Folks, then we go to votes on the motion. We'll play some sound from yesterday. We'll also look ahead today at the president's last day of presentations. Back after this.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey everyone, welcome back into Jay Sekulow Live. For those of us, you who are watching on Facebook or Periscope, you saw during the break a video of Jordan Sekulow joining Sean Hannity talking about what we witnessed yesterday on the floor of the United States Senate. And Jordan really emphasized that the legal team was very intentional on focusing on the facts and the evidence and the law that is at hand, not on speculation, not on made-up transcripts, as we saw in the House, but the facts and the rule of law. We saw this theme repeated repeatedly on the floor by basically every member of the president's legal defense team. I'm actually going to play a piece of sound from you from Jay in just a moment from the floor of the United States Senate. But I wanted to quickly bring in Colonel Smith to this conversation. Colonel Smith, one of the things that frustrated me so greatly during the House proceedings was how often the debate centered around things that did not happen. I mean, I think the American people deserve a proceeding, deserve deliberations, whether you're talking about a policy matter or certainly something that rises to the level of impeachment. The intelligence of the American people deserves to be presented with the facts, and that's what the debate should be on. But so often in the House, that's not what we saw play out yesterday in the Senate, Wes. We returned to facts, we returned to rule of law, and I really think that was a very appropriate and important shift in these proceedings.
It was key. It really was. As you said, in the House, there was so much innuendo. So many of the witnesses who were not fact witnesses were testifying based on their assumptions about so many things. And this whole impeachment process, it really is dangerous, then. It's dangerous to the future American presidents, to the constitutional separation of powers. It's dangerous, really, to due process and to basic fairness. The Democrats' presentation in the House and the managers in the Senate has been so incomplete. It's designed to give limited information and to mislead so that they either ignore evidence or they edit out material that damages the credibility of their arguments. And in addition to that, an impeachment coming 9 months before an election actually would make Congress guilty of what they are accusing the president of, and that is interfering in the 2020 election. So with all of this as a backdrop, Jay and the defense team, they literally took this apart piece by piece, very logically, very methodically, and simply presenting honest facts. They don't have to use innuendo. They don't have to make things up. And facts are on their side. But in addition to facts being on a person's side, how you present those facts and your credibility and believability is so important. And I think they came through in flying colors yesterday.
Yeah, and they were able to do it, Wes, by really breaking down the topics into seven different presentations. I think he had seven different members of the president's legal defense team go in-depth on one of these issues, and Jay sort of tied the narratives together. He provided analysis on each of the issues leading into each of the speakers. I wanted to play for you to sort of kind of get a flavor for how this worked. Jay took a couple of minutes to walk through some of the key facts, or at least the alleged facts that were put forward by the House managers, and then he broke them down one by one. They did this in greater depth over the course of the day, but in this two-minute soundbite, I think you're going to hear a sort of an overview in just 2 minutes of the strategy of the president's legal defense team focusing on facts and what the rule of law has to say about them. This is Jay on the floor of the Senate yesterday. It's Bite 5.
We're next going to address a factual analysis to briefly reflect my colleague, the Deputy White House Counsel, Mike Papura, will be joining us in a moment to discuss more of the facts, to continue the discussion that we had on Saturday. But let me just recap very quickly what was laid out on Saturday. First, the transcript shows that the President did not condition either security assistance or a meeting on anything. The pause security assistance funds aren't even mentioned on the call. Second, President Zelensky and other Ukrainian officials repeatedly said there was no quid pro quo and no pressure on them to review anything. Third, President Zelensky and high-ranking Ukrainian officials did not even know the security assistance was paused till the end of August, over a month after the July 25th call. Fourth, not a single witness testified that the president himself said that there was any connection between any investigation and security assistance, a presidential meeting, or anything else. Fifth, the security assistance flowed on September 11th and a presidential meeting took place on September 25th without Ukrainian government announcing any investigations. Finally, in the blind drive to impeach the president, President Trump, in reality, strategically, has been the best friend and supporter of Ukraine, certainly in our recent history. These are the facts. That is what's before you.
These are the facts. 5 points, one after the other, one at a time. Harry, not shying away from them, laying them out as the House managers presented them, and then correcting the record, telling the Senate the actual information, the evidence that should have been in the record. I think of that transcript that underlies all of this, that when Chairman Schiff held these original proceedings, he had to make it up as he went along because the actual transcript, the actual evidence that we had, did not support the claim that he was making. Harry, I thought this was a very effective way. Again, there was a lot of accusations from Chairman Schiff that the president's team was going to dodge. That is not what we saw yesterday at all. Jay sort of summarized the case, laid it out, and then he deferred one by one to members of the president's legal team to take these facts head on based on the evidence.
I think you're precisely correct. So we should note, and I think it is clear from reviewing all of the record provided by the House managers, that Adam Schiff, for instance, did most of the heavy lifting. And it is equally clear that he relied on arguments and tropes that do not withstand careful scrutiny. T.S. Eliot has said, what might have been and what could be remain a possibility only in a world of speculation. President Trump's defense explored and exploited the House manager's case, consistent with T.S. Eliot's other brilliant claim that we should not cease from exploration, for the end of all of our exploration is to arrive at the place we started and to know the place for the first time. So where have we arrived? We have arrived at the facts that House managers consistently underplayed or misstated. their case depends largely on speculation, innuendo, and falsehoods. But if we focus clearly on the facts, we move away from the world of exploration and we move toward a world that consists of reality, and that world of reality clearly supports the president and the president's defense team in this particular instance. So there was no quid pro quo. There was no extortion. There was no bribery. So if you examine all of the evidence, it undermines the House manager's case. And in addition to which, they managed to bring up Burisma and the Bidens 300 to 400 times, placing that story at the center of the case. And guess what? The evidence supports the president's inquiry with respect to the Ukrainians, because he was very concerned about whether the Ukrainians had helped to interfere, if you will, in the 2016 election. He clearly has the constitutional right, and I would argue the constitutional duty, to explore any attempt by a foreign power to undermine or interfere with his election in 2016. Keep in mind, no one believed that President Trump would win except the American people. And I think the president's team in this particular case did a very effective job in undermining the House manager's case, which is grounded, as I said before, merely on speculation.
Yeah, we're going to play some of the sound that was referenced by Harry after this break. I wanted to read a couple of your comments. I think this is reflective of what the American people think. Sandra on Facebook said, the entire defense team did an awesome job. Very proud they are on our side. Eli on Facebook said, it's time for this to be over. Democrats are still lacking substance. Well, fortunately, Eli, it is about to be over. The president's team has one more day ahead of them to finish presenting their case. Then you'll have 2 days worth of questionings if they decide to use it by senators. Then you will have debate on motions and other possible witnesses or documents. That will be the crux of the trial. And then we will be done, folks. The senators will have to vote. And ultimately, it will be back in the hands of the American voters come next November. After this break, more sound to you for you from yesterday's trial. Also, we hope to be joined by Jordan Seculo to give us an update from inside the president's legal defense team. Day three of the president's defense presentations just ahead, folks, just about 40 minutes away. We'll be back after this break.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. I want to jump right into some of the specific arguments that were advanced by the president's legal team yesterday. We laid out in the first couple of segments of the broadcast how Jay promised the Senate that they would get into specific facts and evidence and that they would correct the record that was put forward by the House managers. And they did that in a systematic way where Jay would set up the issue, he would give a brief analysis of it, and then he would yield to another member of the president's legal team to go very in-depth on that particular point and the law that applied. I wanted to play for you just about 1 minute of sound from Michael Purpura. He's part of Pat Cipollone's White House counsel's office, talking about this issue of an alleged linkage between security assistance and investigations of the Bidens and others, Burisma and other alleged corruption. This is Bite One, Mike Purpura, on the floor of the United States Senate yesterday.
To echo my colleague, Mr. Sekulow, briefly, the House manager's own evidence shows that President Trump did not condition anything on investigations during the July 25 call with President Zelensky and did not even mention the paused security assistance on the call. President Zelensky said that he felt no pressure on the call. President Zelensky and the top Ukrainian officials did not learn of the pause on the security assistance until more than a month after the July 25 call. And the House manager's own record, their record that they developed and brought before this chamber, reflects that anyone who spoke with the president said that the president made clear that there was no linkage between security assistance and investigations.
Harry, I thought this was so effective because he basically made the case that you don't even have to disagree with the House managers to draw the conclusion that the president should be exonerated. If you look at the record that was brought forward by the House managers, the direct evidence, the direct testimony that we have specifically says that the president did not create this linkage. Any suggested linkage was, again, a presumption or an assumption. The people who the president talked to all testified that there was no linkage between these two things. So, Harry, it was just a very effective use of the House manager's case, even if you take it in its entirety, proving the president's point.
I think you're precisely correct. So we should keep two things in mind. First, the House managers looked at the precise same record with blinders on their eyes. That's number one. Number two, the House managers have accused President Trump of having corrupt intent when it turns out that they viewed the evidence with their own version of corrupt intent. So, again, let's focus on the January 25th phone call. That transcript is bereft of any evidence linking assistance to President Trump with respect to launching an investigation and the Ukrainian government receiving the appropriated funds. Also keep in mind that consistent with the law, the Ukrainians actually received the assistance within the statutory time period set out. And so if you look at the transcript of the phone call, there's no mention of the congressionally approved assistance whatsoever. There was a discussion initiated by President Zelensky suggesting that they wanted javelins, but that was not part of what Congress approved, and that was paused by President Trump. So again, you have to look at the House record with blinders on your eyes, with a corrupt mind, in order to claim that the president violated the Constitution, that he abused his office, that he obstructed Congress, or that he engaged in any form of misconduct. Lastly, let me make this point. And Alan Dershowitz made this point brilliantly. Misconduct standing alone by the president is insufficient, is an insufficient basis on which to ground an impeachment charge. Routinely, the American people will claim that President X or President Y, whether it's George Washington or John F. Kennedy, engaged in misconduct. And so what we have before the American people right now is simply a standardless impeachment claim. In other words, it's a claim made up out of whole cloth. It's entirely fictional. It resides firmly and unmistakably in the imagination of Adam Schiff.
Yeah, just like many of the other claims we've been dealing with. Folks, I know I've played a lot of sound for you, but I really want you to have the direct evidence of this. I want to play one more before this half hour of the broadcast is up. This is an important issue that Jay talked about. This is just about a minute and a half. The issue of executive privilege and why that's important. Again, this is Jay on the floor of the Senate, Bite 8.
Mr. Feldman talked about the importance, just concluded on the importance of executive privilege. Professor Turley, who testified before the House, said we have three branches of government, not two. If you impeach a president, if you make a high crime and misdemeanor out of going to court, it is an abuse of power. It's your abuse of power. With regard to executive privilege, it was Mr. Nadler who called it executive privilege and other nonsense. When Attorney General Holder refused to comply with subpoenas, President Obama invoked executive privilege, arguing, and I quote, compelled disclosure would be inconsistent with the separation of powers established in the Constitution. Executive power and other nonsense. Manager Schiff wrote that the White House assertion of executive privilege was backed by decades of precedent that has been recognized and has recognized the need for the president and his senior advisors to receive candid advice and information from their top aides. Executive privilege and other nonsense. The nonsense, we talked about this the other night, is to treat the separation of powers and constitutional privileges as if they're asbestos in the ceiling tiles. You can't touch them. That's not the way the Constitution is designed.
It's an incredible point. It's a good a turn of phrase. It's also an incredibly important constitutional provision. If we want a president of the United States, a chief executive, who is able to get good counsel and make good decisions under Article 2 of the Constitution, the authorities that are afforded him there, he has to be able to have these privileges, have the ability to get candid counsel from his advisors. Folks, that really is at the core of this case. We've talked about many times how two of the dangers of this is that this standard would set up perpetual impeachment for future presidents, and also that it would impair their ability to conduct foreign affairs. I would suggest to you that it would impair their ability to conduct affairs on a wide variety of issues if this is the standard that is put forward. When we come back from this break, we're going to play more sound from you, from Jay, also other members of the president's legal defense team. We will also get you ready for today's proceedings, the final day of presentations from the president's team. Folks, we're almost done. I got to tell you, I'm ready for it to be done. I think the president's team is ready for it to be done, but I'm grateful they're proceeding in such a careful, calculated way. More sound from yesterday's proceedings after this break.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now your host, Dan Bennett.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. I am Than Bennett coming to you from Washington, D.C. We're just about 30 minutes away now from the final day of presentations from the president's legal team. Hopefully we'll be joined by Jordan in just a minute here. I'm sure you can understand his schedule has been crazy over the last few days. We've been fortunate to be able to get him for a few minutes every day. Hopefully that will be the case again today. But we've been walking through some of the direct evidence that the president's team took on yesterday on the floor of the United States Senate. I was so impressed. There was no dodging. There was an addressing of the issues one by one. Many members of the president's team got involved. It was clear they had done their deep research. They were prepared to make their case. I wanted to play for you a little bit of sound from Pam Bondi. She brought up the case, the issue of Hunter Biden, Burisma, and the other allegations of corruption inside Ukraine. And she addressed how this was not something that the president's team maybe was eager to go for. They would not have brought this up, maybe not central to the case, or so maybe they would have said that. But the House managers brought it up. Repeatedly, they brought it up. We played some of that sound from you, from Jordan, on with Sean Hannity yesterday. But I wanted to play you this bite. This is Pam Bondi on the floor of the Senate yesterday talking about the case against Hunter Biden.
When the House managers gave you their presentation, when they submitted their brief, they repeatedly referenced Hunter Biden and Burisma. They spoke to you for over 21 hours, and they referenced Biden or Burisma over 400 times. And when they gave these presentations, they said there was nothing, nothing to see. It was a sham. This is fiction. In their trial memorandum, the House managers described this as baseless. Now, why did they say that? Why did they invoke Biden or Burisma over 400 times? The reason they needed to do that is because they are here saying that the president must be impeached and removed from office for raising a concern. And that's why we have to talk about this today. They say sham, they say baseless, because they say this, because if it's okay for someone to say, hey, you know what? Maybe there's something here worth raising, then their case crumbles. Because they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that there is no basis to raise this concern. But that's not what public records show.
Wes, a lot of folks were surprised that the House managers opened up this issue. I personally think they opened it up because they knew there was a huge vulnerability here and they were trying to get out in front of it. But Pam Bondi is exactly right. The House managers opened it up. She just simply set the record straight.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm not even sure that the president's defense team would have brought it up had the Democrats not done that. But, you know, in thinking about this, and I appreciate what Pam Bondi said, you know, as Americans, we have to be very careful from where we get our news. Because in light of what she said, I thought it was so fascinating, but predictable political bias. In the Washington Post this morning, they said concerning the defense yesterday that Jay and the other members of the team, that they had to bring up the Bidens, because President Trump mentioned them on the July 25th phone call, and that is absolutely a falsehood. The defense team, as Pam Bondi said, mentioned it because the Democratic managers brought it up over 400 times. But you would not know that reading some of the mainstream newspapers or listening to some of the mainstream media.
I was glad to see Pam Bondi say it on the floor of the United States Senate. I was glad to see Jordan bring it up with Sean Hannity. Hopefully Jordan will be with us in the next segment of the broadcast. He's doing his best to break away and give us an update. But either way, when we come back, we'll play some more sound from the proceedings that have already happened in the United States Senate. And we'll maybe give you a little tease of what we expect of today's proceedings. It could be up to 15 hours. That's what the president's team has left. White House counsel Pat Cipollone has suggested they won't take all of that time. I suspect he's probably right. But either way, final day of presentations from the president's team just minutes away.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We've been breaking down sound from yesterday's proceedings in the United States Senate. We played some arguments from many members of the president's legal defense team. Sort of the way this was structured is Jay initially presented and laid out how the day would go, laid out the specific issues that would be touched upon. He gave his own analysis on several of the issues, both at the beginning and then in between speakers. And then he yielded to different members of the president's team to talk about an issue that they were specifically an expert in. And I thought it was pretty telling because the day opened after Jay introduced the proceedings with Ken Starr and then closed with Alan Dershowitz. Pat Cipollone got up at the very end and gave a few very brief remarks. But the lengthy presentations were bracketed by Ken Starr and Alan Dershowitz. And it just showed to me the strength of the case based on the diversity of the political ideology represented by those making the president's case. And I wanted to play for you a sample of Professor Dershowitz's presentation. His presentation was based on the constitutional underpinnings of the charges brought against President Trump. And I mean, spoiler alert, basically the underpinnings are very, very weak. But I thought his perspective and his political leanings, and he said them openly on the floor of the United States Senate, I thought it gave great weight to the constitutional arguments he was making. So this is Alan Dershowitz, bite one from yesterday on the floor of the Senate.
I stand before you today as I stood in 1973 and 1974 for the protection of the constitutional and procedural rights of Richard Nixon, who I personally abhorred, and whose impeachment I personally favored, and as I stood for the rights of Bill Clinton, who I admired, and whose impeachment I strongly opposed. I stand against the application and misapplication of the constitutional criteria in every case and against any president without regard to whether I support his or her parties or policies. I would be making the very same constitutional argument had Hillary Clinton, for whom I voted, been elected and had a Republican House voted to impeach her on these unconstitutional grounds. I am here today because I love my country and our Constitution. Everyone in this room shares that love.
Harry, I thought this was so important because this is someone who openly said he abhorred Richard Nixon, he admired Bill Clinton, he voted for Hillary Clinton, but the most important thing to him and the most important thing for all of us should be our constitutional way of government, adhering to the rule of law and making sure that the wishes of the American voters are not overturned. There needs to be a very high threshold for impeachment. And Alan Dershowitz made a very strong case of that on the floor of the United States Senate yesterday. Harry, I thought it was a very appropriate way to close yesterday's proceedings.
You are absolutely correct. So Alan Dershowitz is right. There is neither a legal or factual basis for impeachment. Instead, Adam Schiff is left desperately seeking a way out of the fictional narrative he has created while he is trapped in the crawl space of his own fertile imagination. For example, Adam Schiff has said the following. Just as he made use of Secretary Clinton's hacked and released emails in the previous presidential campaign. There's no evidence that Trump was linked to Russian hacking of any variety. So there is absolutely no connection. Yet Adam Schiff, again operating out of his fertile imagination, makes that claim. He also said in 2016, then-candidate Trump implored Russia to hack his opponent's email account. This is an irresponsible and unsubstantiated claim. Third, Adam Schiff said in pushing the Ukrainians on the CrowdStrike theory, Trump was attempting to erase history and his previous election misconduct. In reality, of course, President Trump sought to hold someone responsible for the alleged Russia hacking, since Russia was such a focus by his critics. But the hacking was not President Trump's work. You needn't take my word for it. You can look to the special counsel's report, which I think exceeds 400 pages, where he found zero evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. Nonetheless, Adam Schiff goes back to the Russia narrative in order to support his unsupportable case with respect to Ukraine. So again, it's a fictional narrative largely coming from the fertile imagination of Adam Schiff, and it fails to meet constitutional muster, and Alan Dershowitz was absolutely correct in pointing that out.
Yeah, it hasn't been rooted in facts from the very beginning, all the way back from when the House considered the investigation, and now as the House managers are presenting it to the United States Senate. One of the most disappointing things to me is that it has appeared to be all about politics. It appears all to be about undermining President Trump's term, realizing that they are having a hard time beating him next November, and so taking this tact to accomplish their political ends. Jay actually brought this up on the floor of the Senate, just talked about the tone of this entire proceeding and how, while it should not be political, it certainly looks like every step of the way, from announcing the investigation before actually reading the transcript to passing the articles but not sending them to the Senate, and then having ceremonial pins at the signing for Speaker Pelosi, it has appeared to be political from the very beginning and all the way through. Jay brought it up on the floor of the Senate. This is Bite 4. I want you to hear the way he framed it.
Judge Starr laid out before you the solemn nature of these proceedings. I want to contrast the solemn nature of these proceedings and what has been laid out before us from a both historical and constitutional perspective. And I want you to think about this: the history, the importance, the solemnity of what we're engaged in here in this great body, with what took place in the House of Representatives upon the signing of articles of impeachment. Pens distributed to the impeachment managers. A celebratory moment. Think about that. Think about this. a poignant moment.
Wes, impeachment is something that should never be celebrated, something that should be taken on with great caution, with great deliberation, and frankly, great reticence. Look, if you want to take on impeachment, you've got to meet a very high threshold under the United States Constitution. It can't be about politics. You should not be celebrating if you have to engage upon it. But look, if your motivation, Wes, is politics from the very beginning, then you're going to see every opportunity along the course of the way as another opportunity to score political points.
Absolutely. You know, and you were talking about facts, as was Jay. You know, I think it was Mark Twain who said, never let facts get in the way of a good story. And with the Democratic managers and the House of Representatives of the Democrats, it's like, never let facts get in the way of your political agenda and your hatred for this president. And they actually epitomize the ethical failure of the end justifying the means. Their desired end state is to get rid of a duly elected president. And it seems they will use whatever means they can concoct, and laying aside at times completely honesty, morality, and fairness, simply because of their own political agenda. And they seem to be blind to the fact that this is a threat to the constitutional republic that we all have pledged allegiance to and that we all say that we love. They're blinded to that because of their own political agenda and how much they despise this president.
I think that's right. The one solace I would take in this whole conversation, I'm disappointed we've gone down this track of pursuing impeachment because of a political agenda, because of a political means, an opportunity to try to win the next election. But here's the one solace I take. It's political in the beginning. It's going to be political in the end, and the American voters are the ones that are going to have the final say. We're just 9 months away from another presidential election, and folks, it's not just the president that's up for re-election. It is every member of the United States House, every one of which has voted during the course of these proceedings on a number of matters. A third of the United States Senate is up. They have yet to vote on these proceedings, but a third of them are going to come back to you and ask for their vote. And then, of course, there's a presidential election. Folks, the Iowa caucuses are 6 days away. I can hardly believe it. But again, it just adds to the ridiculousness of this impeachment proceeding. This is a matter that should be decided by the American people. Professor Dershowitz made this case very strongly yesterday. The sacredness of the American vote is really at stake here. This is an issue that should be decided in November, and we're just 6 days away from Democrats trying to decide who their nominee is going to be. We have to defend that right for the American voters. We'll be back after this with more sound from the Senate floor.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Welcome back into Jay Sekulow Live. I am very happy to announce that we are being joined by Jordan Sekulow right now to give us a live update from the president's legal defense team. Jordan, I know you probably don't have a lot of time. Thank you for calling in. What's the latest from where you sit?
Well, you know, today you're going to hear from, obviously, the White House counsel. You're going to hear from the president's top outside counsel, our namesake for the show, Jay Sekulow, my dad, and others as well. And again, I want to just underscore, I encourage people, this starts at 1 p.m. Eastern time, to really check this out today, this kind of closing, if you will. And it says we're not necessarily going to yield back all of our time because it looks like questions probably not start until tomorrow based on the Senate schedule. Now, all that can always change. But it looks like Senate questions start tomorrow, and Fan, that's over 16 hours, so probably 2 days. So that's where we are right now. I just want to encourage people. I'm sure they saw Professor Dershowitz last night, Kinstar and others. I encourage people, if they can, to check this out today or at least later today, if they're not able to. But it's streaming everywhere too on all social media places for free at 1 p.m. When this is gaveled in, and you're going to hear again from the White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, and you're going to hear from the president's top outside counsel, Jay Sekulow, and one of the deputy White House counsels as well. In a sense, like a closing, but I got to remind people, we're not yielding back our time. We're going to let see what else, if anything, if we need to address or anything like that comes up, and then we'll get into questions. So this is not like the end you'll hear. I mean, there's a big debate coming with 16 hours of questions. And good news to everybody, they are short responses. You don't get like 20 minutes to answer a question. So you won't hear Adam Schiff for 20 minutes at a time or 30 minutes at a time. It's limited to, it could be 5 minutes, it could be less. So, I mean, again, that'll be a very interesting 1 or 2 days, depending on how long the senators go. They have up to 16 hours.
Appreciate you joining us, Jordan. I just maybe quickly, if you have one more second, we've talked about how the defense team really focused in on facts and evidence and filling the holes that were left by the House managers presenting this case. I thought yesterday was tremendously effective in that route. And you said we're probably going to see a little bit more of that before a closing. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes. And then, yes, and you're, and in a sense, the closings, it's really, because there was so much info yesterday. Remember, the first day we went is for just like a couple hours. Yesterday was the full day. Today is not going to be too long. Probably a couple hours, maybe a little bit more. It could go longer. I mean, but the ultimate is, you will hear the closing in a sense are both going to be kind of different, and they are not the last word from us on this, because we answer questions for 16 hours, and it looks like that will not start until tomorrow, Than. But you know how things work here; could change.
Right.
And I think you will hear it. For people who didn't get to watch, which most people wouldn't be able to, from Kinstar all the way to Alan Dershowitz, and then White House Counsel Pat Cipollone finishing up the night last night. My dad kind of multiple times in between. This kind of, I know, what he'll be doing is kind of putting that all together succinctly for people who may have seen a clip here, a clip there, a clip there, and then you'll be hearing, you'll be hearing something, kind of the same thing, but on the different topics that were addressed from the White House counsel. So I encourage people to check this out at 1 p.m. Eastern time. As again, I don't expect us to be having to make more remarks than what you'll see today. We are planning not to necessarily like yield back our time in case the chair has anything, anything else or needs to be addressed before the questions.
Appreciate you taking time to be with us, Jordan. I just tell you, as you're getting off the line here, so many listeners and people watching on Facebook, grateful for the fact that you would join us each day, grateful that you and your dad are there representing the president, making this forceful case. So appreciate you being with us today. Folks, a couple of things that Jordan said that I think are instructive here. We have to remember, we keep giving you a look forward at what's going to happen, but you have to remember, this is the United States Senate. Things can change. Remember, initially, each side was only supposed to have 2 days to present their case. That got extended to 3 by consent. You can also have periods where one side might decide to yield back. And Jordan, I'm just going to come back to you on this point. Yeah. You said that you all are likely to not yield back your time. Even if you decide not to use it all, you may not yield it back. So these things are always fluid.
Very, very fluid. I mean, I just wanted to ask for this. The words will be uttered today. You know, this has been it's a proud moment, and honorable. It's an honor to be able to represent the president for everybody at that table, for everybody in the back rooms working on this and who have been working on this. But I want to ask for people's prayers today. I know they've been praying throughout this for strength, for wisdom, for clarity, so that the words that we have chosen, the words that we choose to use, are clear to the senators and to the American people.
No doubt about it. Certainly agree with that, Jordan.
Thanks, Dan. I certainly have been praying.
Thank you, Jordan. I've been praying for you. Been praying for your dad. I know our listeners and ACLJ members have as well. You're right where we want you to be, but certainly we're standing with you, supporting you in prayer, keeping you in our thoughts and prayers. Folks, it's great to have Jordan with us. This has been a very intense time, and I would just maybe go to Wes quickly. Actually, you know what? Let me do this. This is what I think is an appropriate way to close the broadcast. I'm grateful for Professor Hutchison and Colonel Smith's thoughts here, but after having Jordan, I think we need to go back and play the soundbite that we started the broadcast off, because after all of the atmospherics, after all of the politics, after all of the rhetoric, we have to remember what a case like this has to be decided upon. It can't be decided on assumptions or presumptions. Folks, in the United States of America, we have to look at the facts, we have to look at the evidence, and then we have to let the rule of law carry the day. And I thought Jay said it very well on the floor of the United States Senate. I want to close the broadcast with this sound from yesterday. I think you'll see more of this today, but this is Jay on the floor of the United States Senate yesterday, bite one.
What we've done on Saturday is the pattern that we're going to continue today as far as how we're going to deal with the case. We deal with transcript evidence. We deal with publicly available information. We do not deal with speculation, allegations that are not based on evidentiary standards at all.
Facts, evidence, and the rule of law. Folks, always in the United States of America, that's how a trial should proceed. It's what a decision should be rooted in. But look, when you're talking about a matter of impeachment, that has to be the basis upon which a decision is made. Not presumption, not assumption, not hearsay, but facts and evidence and the rule of law. Folks, I would just echo to you what Jordan asked of you just a minute ago. Keep both Jay and Jordan in your thoughts and prayers. Keep the president's team in your thoughts and prayers. He asked for clarity of thought, clarity of speech. I would certainly echo that. I think they've had very short nights during these proceedings. Certainly, I think the team has done a great job. We're just minutes away. Senators are filing into the chamber now. The final day of presentations from the president's legal defense team, and then it'll be 2 days of questions. Folks, we're almost there. Stay tuned. We'll bring more for you tomorrow, but just ahead, just in minutes, the final day of the president's legal defense team making their case.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.